Hi, I'm Piper.
And I'm Erin.
Welcome to Off the Tracks podcast, where we explore what it means to do law differently.
Jen Barzari is a litigator, fitness business co-owner, wife to a CFO slash rapper, and mom to two feisty yet fantastic young boys. After law school, Jen spent almost 12 years working for a large corporate law firm doing energy litigation. In 2016, when promised a legal role that would permit her a quote-unquote rich personal life, she departed Big Law to join Aviva Trial Lawyers as their first in-house litigation counsel in Calgary. This role change indeed provided her with the time to revisit her passion for physical movement, music, and connection via training for and working as a group of fitness instructors and eventually co-creating Kin and Fit, a welcoming, inclusive, and supportive fitness community that continues to stay true to its philanthropic roots.
Jen, we are so excited to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
I am super excited and kind of terrified to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, well, Jen was one of the very first people I met when I moved to Calgary. I learned about Jen's existence in this great big world because of a profile that the University of Calgary did on Jen as an alumni. And so in one of my very first days of being in Calgary, I went to one of her classes and it was so much fun. And I actually met one of my colleagues at her classes before I'd even met my colleague at work. And I was at one of Jen's classes yesterday. So she's amazing. And we'll sort of get into all of what that means in a second. But Jen, we always love to start the podcast by learning a little bit about, in your own words, how your career has evolved over time. Because I know that you've had like many different paths and roles pre-law and, you know, within law. And we'd sort of love to know kind of how you got to where you are today.
Sure. It's going to sound a little bit like a curriculum vitae, but with a little bit of pizzazz, I hope. I thought I was going to go into academia for the longest time. I wanted to be a student. I love learning. I love school. So I did an undergrad in English. I did a master's in communications. Regrettably, one of the things I did was attend the U of C for my master's, not because the program was terrible, but because I was terrified to do anything other than go to Calgary from Lethbridge, which is a two-hour drive. And I gave up the opportunity to attend two other universities, McGill and University of Washington. So this kind of plays into, if you ask me questions later about how I got into what I'm doing now outside of law, I was really scared to do anything. So I went to the UC, did my master's there, and I thought, okay, the next logical thing for me to do is to do a PhD. But I sat down and spoke with two different people in my program, my thesis advisor, who was also a lawyer and an academic, and then the main person who ran the program, and they seemed to think that being in academia was not the thing for me. And I don't know why. And I also felt like I couldn't really articulate why it wasn't a good fit, but I made a decision to follow in the footsteps of my thesis advisor. And I went to law school, and the only place I applied to was the U of C because I was too scared to go anywhere else. Thankfully, despite my very bad LSAT score, I'm not good at analytical reasoning and I just struggled. I managed to get into the program. And 3 years later, I applied, well, not 3 years later, like a year later, I applied to be a summer student at some big firm because I thought that that was the most prestigious and like thing to do. I thought that's what people did. So I got a summer job. And then that translated into an offer at the end of the summer for an articling job at the same firm. Like, okay, I'm set. I don't ever have to do anything again. And I said, okay, I'll take that. And I got an articling job at the courts as well, which was much more my style. The people who were in my articling year spent hours and hours and hours more than I did doing their articles. And we just worked from like 9 until 5. And then we had time to do our CCLED course. And it was great. I spent a ton of time working with the judges and the legal counsel, talking about really weird legal issues. I got to help write decisions. We were involved in some pretty interesting stuff. And then I went to the firm. And that was where I thought I would spend the rest of my life. I went into litigation because of my background in writing and researching. And yeah, I feel like you might want to jump in and ask another question. I don't know.
Oh my
God. And then I became a lawyer.
Jen, you're amazing. I literally have been so looking forward to this and I've just been hyping it up so much to Erin and saying, I don't know how I'm going to possibly do a short episode. Okay. Okay, Jen, let's kind of talk about a little bit. So you worked at this big firm for quite a long time.
I did.
What was the catalyst for your switch to go in-house? How did you make that change?
I don't think it was any one thing. I think it was 12 years of a whole bunch of little things that made me realize that this is not the place for me to be. I grew up a lot, obviously. I got to see a lot of things I didn't really like. I mean, it was a great job. I made a crazy amount of money. I worked on huge files for really exciting clients, and I had things to work on that were really interesting. I got to go on firm retreats all over the United States for free, where we hadn't any requirement to do work. All we did was have everything paid for. We went out for dinner, we went out for drinks, we went on cruises, all of this crazy stuff. Our office was beautiful. Like, everything seemed great. But again, a million tiny little things over that period of 12 years made me realize it wasn't the right place. It was largely towards the end of my practice there when I got married, decided to have children, and actually had children. And maybe it was after I had my first kid, I came back after a year of mat leave, and I was the only person at my firm who had ever taken, as far as I know, I don't want to speak in absolutes, who had ever taken a year-long mat leave. Which is, back then, like, you were legally entitled to take that much. Now it's 18 months or something. But yeah, we got topped up to 5.5 months full salary. So I was making my full salary for 5.5 months, and nobody stayed longer than that. In fact, some people came back sooner, which is also insane to me. So I spent that full year not telling anyone each month I wasn't coming back. I wasn't coming back. And then I came back, and one of the senior female partners said to me, "Oh, wow, we're really surprised that you came back. We thought you were just going to become a stay-at-home mom," which really opened my eyes to how they saw the ability to do more than one thing. Like, either you are going to be a full-time lawyer and get two nannies, or you are going to be a stay-at-home mom and say goodbye to your legal career. You can't work at a place like this if you do that. So yeah, that may have been a bigger eye-opening experience than I realized. You're making me think about this. And then I stayed longer after that, which is crazy to think. I came back in 2011 and I didn't leave until 2016. So it took me 4 years to actually take all of those little things and then that one bigger thing to make the decision to get the hell out of there.
Wow, that's just astonishing. And it just goes to show how much work we have to do in the legal profession. Yes. I think both of our jaws literally dropped, but it's shocking, but not shocking at the same time, unfortunately, which is probably the sadder part, but thanks for sharing that experience with us. So you kind of hinted towards sort of like the bigger thing. So could you tell us a bit about what the, you know, most significant setback you've faced in your career has been and how you've learned from it?
After 12 years, realizing that I did not want to become a partner at a large corporate law firm, and also realizing that I don't think that they ever really wanted me to become a partner at their firm. And when I left in 2016, it was quite an exodus of associates. Our firm didn't, like a lot of other firms, have an option of anything beyond associate for a certain period of time and then equity partner. So, and I don't know that things have changed a lot in the past 6 or so years where there's a value placed on someone who has a ton of experience, but also doesn't want to work 1800 plus hours. So now I've lost what I'm talking about. Remind me what the question was.
No, it's okay. It's about what setback really was.
The biggest setback that I had was realizing that I'd spent 12 years living, like giving up so much of my life to something that I realized at that time I didn't want. And I realized that they didn't really want me either. And also that I probably knew from the very beginning that I didn't want it, but I wasn't willing to listen to like my actual authentic voice that said, "This is not a good fit for you. You're not going to be happy." Like, I spent 12 years doing that, and I gave up a whole bunch of stuff. So yeah, that is a big setback. But what I learned from it, it wasn't a setback. Like, realizing that was the biggest reward that I had, because if I didn't have that partnership conversation where I looked back at all of the things I had to do. And then I looked around me at all the women I was working with who had become partner. And when I say all, it was like three. I would never be where I am right now. And I actually had the chance to speak with some of my colleagues at work today because we were in office today. And they also said, you know, the decision to leave seemed like a really big setback. And 2 years later, I still feel traumatized from it. But I also feel like eventually I'm going to realize it was a gift that I had that opportunity to stop and look back where I was and look forward where I could go to.
So Jen, you mentioned, you know, listening to your authentic voice. And I think that's something that a lot of people in the legal profession and every profession, but especially the legal profession, like really grapple with. And when I speak to a lot of young law students and young lawyers, Aaron and I were called to the bar in 2020. And so, you know, our peers and colleagues are fairly like new calls, so to speak. And I speak to people all the time, especially as someone who like recently retired their license, that say like, how did you do that? And for me, it was, you know, listening to that authentic voice finally. And so I think, how would you describe like what clicked for you that made that authentic voice like louder and you were finally able to like see it and hear it clearly and also take action?
I had a really close friend who was a couple years junior to me. She's still one of my very close friends. Like we vacationed together and she's in my fitness cohort. She was going through the same thing at the same time with me. And I don't think I realized when we first, like we actually decided to have our children together at the same time, which is a little creepy to think about, like what that means when you're like, we're going to have a baby at the same time. It means you got to go home and have a baby at the same time. So she going through that at the same time with me, being a really, really powerful personality, super strong, and seeing her struggle and be vulnerable. And then we would go and sit in this restaurant in our office space where we would cry together every day. She really got me through that. And I don't know that I could have done that without her, I think. And I hope that I don't know if you'll ask her the same thing ever, but I hope that I provided that same support. But it's interesting for me to think about it that way, because one of the things that my new life has shown me is the extreme importance of strong female friendships, like a huge network of women, like really great, authentic women. I didn't have that other than this one person at my job. It was a toxic, toxic workplace of overly competitive men and women. People who I thought were my friends when I left my firm never spoke to me again, and I never spoke to them again. So yeah, that one person really was something that carried me through.
Yeah, that is like realization I had when I was articling is I had a pretty traditional articling experience, but it wasn't like crazy hours like you're talking. It was just pretty normal standard, a lot of hours for articling, but still you just spent so much time with your coworkers and then you would come home and on the weekend I didn't even have energy to like see my friends and family. I was just drained. And now I work from home and the people I see, it's just my fiance and my dog in between, but it's just so nice. Not to say that the people at work aren't nice, but you know, it's just like, you really start to realize that your day like then becomes absorbed by who you're around and you're spending the bulk of your working hours around these people. And then you're completely drained when you go to see your friends and family after. And I don't know, just talking about hearing about that sort of environment that you're in, it's really hard to realize it when you're in it and you're just used to being in that environment. But then when you get out of it and you're like, oh, wow, this is what it's like to not be working in an environment like that, it can be really powerful. And I'm really glad to hear that you were able to find a friendship that helped you realize that.
Yeah, she did really help me see what I really wanted, and to jump back to what Piper said, to hear the real voice of what I was looking for and not to get lost in like the excitement and the like supposed importance of what we were doing. Like we kept being told at this firm, like I can only speak of my experience at my firm, but I know having spoken with other people, this is endemic in the practice of big law. I don't think that my experience was unique. We felt like we were doing the most important work ever. Like it was so valuable. It was worth so much money. Our clients were so important. And we just got swept up in that. And then again, to hear what is really important to me. Well, it's not really that. I'm not changing lives here. I'm not saving people. I'm not even doing anything good. I'm surrounded by people who have very narrow views to the point where I'm being changed to think that everybody in the world sees things the same way as all of these people I work with. And then I don't have time or energy, as you said, Erin, to spend time with people outside of this world. So yeah, it really changes people a lot.
Yeah, Jen, wow. It's funny because, you know, I've just gotten to know you over the past couple of months, and you're this like exuberant, enthusiastic, energizer bunny who like lifts up everyone around you. And so Erin's point, and to your point as well, like the environment you're in really impacts how you're able to go throughout the world in the rest of your day. So with all of that being said, like, how did you, you know, I don't want to use the word transition because it's not really accurate, but like, how did you move into like incorporating fitness into your life? And like becoming a fitness instructor, because I know that that happened while you were still at your firm.
It sort of did. I spoke before about when I went to do my master's and when I went to go to law school, I was very scared to step outside of a really small box that I felt comfortable in. I would probably say like an undiagnosed person with or OCD person. I am very like narrow in terms of what I feel comfortable with. Everything makes me feel nervous if it involves change. And so I take very few risks. And I've always been involved in dancing, fitness, ski instructing, things like that. But I did it in a safe way when I was growing up. I remember, and this will date me, when I was at Only Women's Fitness in Lethbridge, Alberta, I wanted to be a fitness instructor and teach step aerobics. And I went to all these classes and I knew all the routines. And I imagined in my head, I was one day going to do it. But there's just an old Jen never, ever would have done that. I was terrified. So I didn't. And then I came and started my job and it consumed my entire life. I didn't have time to take care of myself. I stopped exercising completely. And I had a trainer that I worked with a little bit when I was doing, or before mat leave and when I was pregnant. But after I came back from my first mat leave, I started doing a little bit more. After I came back from my second mat leave, I was feeling the stress and the unhappiness even more acutely. Like it had been quite a while since I realized probably this is not a good fit. And I have a good friend who was really, really into spin, which I know Piper just loves. And she took me to her spin studio. And my friend is a radiologist and she has a super stressful life herself. And she said, this is great. You go in a dark room, you put loud music on and you can step outside your head and you can step outside those thoughts that are with you every single minute. And so I went and it was the hardest thing I've ever done before. Like I didn't believe in cardio before this and I do now. And I thought I was going to die in that class. I was in the back corner and I was so thankful that it was really dark, because I probably almost fell off my bike 3 times and I couldn't breathe. So after that class, I'm like, this was amazing. No, like it was terrifying and so hard, but it was a moment of time where I could shut my brain off and I could leave everything. And like, because it was so hard and so intense and I just kept going. So here's like the undiagnosed OCD part of my personality. I went like 5 times a week at 6 o'clock in the morning, mainly because I could park outside for free and there was parking, but also because it was the only time I could go because I was still working at my firm. And it wasn't until I left my firm that I decided that I actually wanted to audition to be an instructor at the spin studio. I didn't get the job. It's crazy to think like now I put myself out there. Old Jen put herself out there, which I can't believe I did it. And I did this audition. Didn't get the job, as I said. I was so embarrassed. I felt awful. Like, why would I ever put myself out? And like, this person is judging my voice and my energy and all of this cueing and stuff. But I didn't give up. My sister, who's also now a fitness instructor, messaged me about an opportunity to teach at a bar studio. And in the interim, I was taking some fitness leading courses and bar courses. And I tried out for that and there we go. I got that. So that's how I transitioned from, and I get, like you said, it's not really a transition. That's how I added something into my life that was so lacking. Law and especially litigation is so adversarial. There's so much fighting. There's so little cohesion. There's so little cooperation. And fitness instructing is so different. I felt like it really just brought people together in the exact opposite way than my law job. So I added it into my life.
Yeah, I love that. We are going through our expenses at the beginning of the year this year, my fiance and I, and the one thing I said was, no, I have to keep my gym membership. I know I could do some workouts from my home, and we have a gym in the basement of our condo building, but going to the gym is just like a whole experience. Like, I love being greeted by the people at the door who like now know my name when I go in, and especially working from home, like you're just by yourself all the time, and getting to go in and meet new faces and some familiar faces is just like so comforting. And it always helps when we have really enthusiastic, awesome instructors like yourself to sort of create that community. But it's such an amazing story to hear. Like, you put yourself out there, what you feared was going to happen happened. And then you still were like, you know what? It's okay. We're going to pivot and we are going to try bar instructing. And now you have Kin and Fit. So can you tell us a bit more about what led you to create Kin and Fit?
Well, this is my longest answer for you. So I'm going to take some breaks so you can interject. And
the water breaks. So just cue us for the water breaks.
Okay. So I did a lot of instructing at my bar studio from about January of 2017 until March of 2020, which obviously is like ground zero for the pandemic starting. And incidentally, I got to teach at my studio the very last class on a Sunday, and then the studio shut down. And I at this time was working at my new job, which was a huge transition for me because it's insurance, which is not anything I took in university or practiced. And it's actually like there's a lot of stuff that I've learned over the past 6 years is different than just straight construction or oil and gas or securities litigation. And I was teaching probably like 5 classes a week if I could pick up people's classes. And I was just like, I was loving it. It was so fantastic because, like I said, it gave me the opportunity to have some connection, community. I made a ton of new friends. Lots of clients became close friends of mine. I got to know several of the instructors, even though they're significantly younger than I am, and lots of them in very different stages of their lives. When the pandemic started, it was, I think, a blow to everyone. It wasn't just the business owners who lost their businesses. It wasn't just the people like you, Erin, who love going to a gym, or Piper, who you love going to take a spin class. It was the instructors as well. And I don't think the studios even realized how much of a like an emotional and social loss it was for the instructors. And it was like, I didn't know what to do. My poor husband, he spent like weeks listening to me talk about this. And thank God I had female friends to talk to because he was getting tired of it.
No, Jen, that's so interesting. And I think too, like, I remember when the, you know, pandemic first hit, sort of like around the day you described, I was living alone and I was in a city where I didn't have a lot of connection at the time. Erin and I were both articling, and I lived for going like Instagram lives, and to the point where I made an Instagram live schedule. So like when I would see instructors I really liked who like posted their Instagram live schedule over the week, I would like write it down and plan my life around it. And I understand, I think you did Instagram lives during the pandemic. Unfortunately, I didn't know about them at the time, but I guarantee I probably would have done them and added them to my very intense Instagram live schedule.
I don't know if anyone actually did the classes with me, because obviously on an IG live, you can't see anybody. You can just see the little comments and the hearts as they float up. But I can't. Oh, here's another thing. I can't believe that I was like 43 at the time. And I thought, I'm just going to set myself up a workout studio in my living room, dining room area. Like, I have an open plan house. It's not like there's any privacy, any quiet. I'm going to set this up. And people are going to watch me, this middle-aged woman with her children all over and a dog and her husband trying to do his job. I took my phone and I taped it to the dining room chair because it didn't have a tripod. I mean, I've learned a lot. The lighting was very poor, but I was super, like, I would write out all the choreography, tape it to a bunch of other chairs. Because I was so nervous of forgetting once I was up there. And then I had to make sure my music sounded right and the light, like, whatever. I spent so much time doing that. And there were so many, like, the guy who built my house worked out with me online. But I felt like I was still able to connect with people. And I was doing that like 3 times a week. I felt like a crazy person. And they're still up. I thought they had been taken off because there was a period where they shut them off because of copyright issues with music that I chose. As a lawyer, I should probably have been more aware of that and use some of that royalty-free music. But yeah, I did that once the pandemic started, like almost immediately, 3 times a week. And I wish you would have known, Piper, because I would have invited you and you could work with me in my living room. Yeah, and that went on for a really long time.
So now I get to work out with you in person and my body is very sore from yesterday's class. And as you said a few minutes ago, when you talked about going to spin class, that you didn't believe in cardio. Let me just make it very clear. Jen really believes in cardio now, like almost too much believes in cardio. And I think I could go as far to say as like almost tried to kill people yesterday in her class with the cardio. So I, you know, appreciate the in-person workouts and all the cardio. So Jen, now, you know, from, you know, not getting that job, the job at the spin studio and teaching bar and the Instagram lives, what is Kin and Fit for those who don't know and haven't had the opportunity to experience it? And how did it come to be?
So Kin and Fit grew out of us taking that idea of like, let's work out in our homes together to a variety, through a variety of different permutations. So the first thing that happened is I decided let's do some sort of a charity class for the Black Lives Matter movement that was going on probably spring, summer 2020. And I found a charity in Canada and a charity in Calgary that was supporting the movement. And it was really hard at that time because you had to still work out outside 2 meters apart. And we got 90 people to come to the class and we raised so much money. It was incredible. And we didn't want to stop doing it. It was myself and a bunch of the other instructors from my studio. So throughout that summer, we just kind of went rogue and planned classes in the same park. We didn't have permits. We had 2 very, very loud speakers that I rented and got in a lot of trouble, but we just kept doing it. And we were scared of, like, we thought we might be able to go back to our studio and we were scared of stepping on the toes of the owners of that studio. So we didn't take any money. We did all of those classes in the park for free and by charitable donations. So we didn't get paid, but all of the instructors, each class chose what they wanted to have people's funds get donated to. And I wish I had kept better track of the number of how much money we raised, but it was probably over $10,000, maybe almost $11,000 that we raised over the summer. And we were able to use our workplace matching and everything and donated everything from that. And I really wanted to keep going with it. And my friend Lisa really wanted to keep going with it. And another friend, Kenna. So we all taught at the same studio. And we kind of just waited to see what would happen if one of us might get a job doing something else. Incidentally, I applied to teach at another online studio and they didn't hire me because they said I did not have a very good voice for recordings.
Oh my gosh.
All the rejection and I still rise up.
Wait until they hear this podcast episode. They'll be like, we wish we had her voice on our platform.
Exactly. I do have a bit of a lisp, so maybe that's what she was sensing, but I feel like that should not preclude me from being part of her organization. So I didn't get that job. And then immediately after I didn't get that job, Kenna, Elisa, and I said, you know what? We want to keep doing this. Let's start something. And that was Kin and Fit. And the reason we chose the name, like kin as in kinesiology, kinetic movement, and then also family, a group, a squad, togetherness. And it fit really well, considering as well, my partner, Lisa, is a kinesiology student and is working on her master's in kinesiology. So we went from there. We did a bunch of online stuff and it was crazy. Like we set our basements up 3 different studios because we couldn't teach together. Eventually, we moved into my garage, painted the walls, put a sign up, kicked my husband out of his parking spot, put heaters in. It was still 10 degrees in the morning sometimes. We taught those online classes. It's like 6 o'clock in the morning. Elisa's rolling in right out of bed, wearing the same clothes she wore the night before. Please forgive me, Elisa, for saying that. Still looked beautiful, so beautiful in every video. And through her connection with someone at Undercard, which was a fitness studio in Calgary, we eventually got into a studio and have been able to do a whole bunch of things in that studio, continuing along with community building and philanthropic things, because that's really, really important to us. It's not just important to do exercising. It's not just important to build a small group community of women and men and like-minded people. We want to do more because we feel like we're pretty lucky. And we have a lot of people in our community who aren't so lucky. So we have some more ideas that we're going to keep using to keep that aspect, the charitable aspect of what our business is. So that's where we are.
Yeah, that is so cool. I really love the name Kin and Fit. And I think that's a really neat play on words that you guys came up with. So I'm excited to see where you guys take things next. So do you have any advice to young lawyers who haven't yet made the leap to pursue their passions outside of law?
Well, yeah, I do. I think one of the things that is really, really important to me now is being a mentor. It seems like all of a sudden I went from being a young lawyer, you know how there's the young lawyer groups that are part of CBA, to now I am someone who can be a mentor. Like, it just happened instantaneously overnight. All of a sudden I had been called, and the next minute I can mentor people. So I'm really big on providing mentorship in some sort of a way. If I were at a firm, I would happily be a mentor or a principal. I would love to do that. We don't have that opportunity in the role that I'm in my in-house role. So I like to go and volunteer at the CBA and find someone who can be a student. In fact, one of the instructors who taught at my bar studio was my mentor. I came late to her mentor meeting and I just taught a class, and she's ready like to meet a lawyer who's going to be dressed in her business suit. And here I am saying, you know what you need to do? You need to have some work-life balance and pursue passions outside of your career, because you can't identify yourself just solely as a lawyer. So I love the opportunity, and I wish I would have had someone do mentorship to me, a female do mentorship to me when I was coming up as a junior lawyer. What I would love to say to junior lawyers is that you do not have to do the same thing that everybody else is doing. And like, you will know if it's the wrong thing. And I have such respect for you, Piper, that you were at such a young age able to say, I'm putting this into retirement and I'm going to do something else. Because you can do so many other things. You just have to listen to that voice, and then you have to be willing to take a risk and do something different, even if it's super, super scary, because you will regret. I would have regretted if I were 60 years old and all I did was work at a firm and I got my 20-year piece of artwork to celebrate. Oh, you've been here at this firm for 20 years. Good for you. I would have been so regretful. So it doesn't even have to be anything huge. Like, you can still do your day job at a big firm, but find time to do something else that makes you feel happy, because I can't imagine that anyone actually feels really, really happy doing just that.
Okay, Jen, I'm going to go a little rogue. And so if you don't like this question, you can just be like, Piper, I don't like this question. But, you know, we asked you, you know, like, what advice you would have for young lawyers. And I know you've aged yourself a couple times on the episode so far, and I know you're in your mid 40s. And I know when I go to classes with you, and when, you know, we've gone to parties, like, I know you're always like, you know, joking about like aging yourself and like being older. But it's so funny, because at least, you know, in my eyes and the eyes of the community around you, like with Kin and Fit, no, like when I met you, Jen, I was like, oh, Jen, like maybe like 3 years older than me. And then I was like, oh wait, that's her husband. Oh wait, that's her like 12-year-old. Like, that just, I don't know. Maybe I'm a little off here, but I guess my question is, like, I really believe in the quote, like, you know, you're never too old and it's never too late, or whatever that phrase is. And so I guess to people who are more your contemporaries, who, because I know, you know, there are so many people out there who who are just scared of taking a leap. And you've talked about fear like earlier in the episode, and fear is really scary, and it's something we all experience in different, like, big and small ways all the time. But to someone listening who, you know, is more your contemporary, more your year of call, like, would you have any advice for them on maybe it's they don't feel like they can make a full jump, but how they could incorporate like more joy and more authenticity into their lives?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it's never too late. Honestly, when I started auditioning to teach, I was 40 years old. I had my 40th birthday and I had just gotten hired to teach. And it was a huge risk and a huge scary thing that I did, but I did it. And then every big risk after that seemed smaller and smaller and less scary. So that, and then the failures after taking those risks seemed less painful and less life encompassing and less tragic. So I guess what I'm saying is I would encourage people of my age group to take some small risk, something that makes them scared, even knowing that they might fail at doing it. And then just sit with that feeling of crappiness about, oh, this didn't work out. And then go, as you go through it, then wait a little bit of time and try something else a little bit scary. And each time the scariness becomes less scary and the potential failure becomes less scary. And then eventually it doesn't matter anymore. You make a decision, you try something new, and you either succeed or fail, and it doesn't matter. And you probably will fail if you keep, or it's rather, you'll probably succeed if you keep trying again and again at anything, but it doesn't even have to be big. Like some of the things that I've tried now, they don't even seem big anymore, but I know, you know what, I'm going to be fine. I failed and I've gotten up and I've done it again. I don't know. That's, I don't want to miss out on doing things. And I truly think you're right, Piper, when you say it's never too late to do stuff.
Wow. Thank you so much. We have so enjoyed having you on the podcast, and I've enjoyed getting to know you a bit more. I've only heard good things from Piper, but it's been such a joy to have you here and learn from you. But we would like to ask you our favorite last question, which is, what is something new that you've learned recently?
Do you want my serious answers or my joking answers?
I like both, to be honest.
Okay. I think I alluded to this in my previous answer to your question, Piper, and it's just that life is too short, but it's also too long to continue doing things that you don't love and to not pursue things that you love. And it's funny to think of it as both too short, because it is. Like, as I said, I went from feeling like I'd just been called to mentoring junior lawyers and hearing people who had just been called 2 years ago and like, oh my God, you're a baby. You're just a baby. I met my husband before you were born, but it's also long. Like, can you imagine spending 20 years doing a job you hate, like just despise? If you can inject some sort of joy into what it is that you're doing, anything that makes you just a little bit happier, you have to do it. Or you can make a bigger change and that might make even an even bigger difference in your life. I learned that I'm a tidy hoarder. My therapist told me that. And I'm okay with that. I learned that I need to have all of my physical objects directly around me in order to be able to access my memories. And that is probably why in my law practice, I have piles and piles of paper that you can't see on camera right now, of all my lists of things to do. And lastly, through teaching this cohort of women that I have a private class, fitness class, we used to go to a local pub that didn't have American cheddar, you know, like Kraft singles for their burgers. And I started bringing my own Kraft singles in my purse for myself and everybody else to the restaurant, to the point where like the waitresses knew that I was coming in to do that. And they just let me put it on the burger because Kraft singles go on everything, including burger restaurants or restaurant burgers. So that's it. Those are the three things I've learned recently.
All of those are excellent. All of those are excellent pieces of advice, Jen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jen, Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today and for sharing like all of the goodness from your authentic self and for regularly kicking my ass and making me sometimes regret waking up to go to a class in the best way. So we are going to link all of the ways to, you know, follow along with all of Jen's cool things in the episode notes. If you ever want to try a Kin and Fit class, send me or Jen a message and I would love to go for you with you if you're local to Calgary. And Jen, thank you so much for joining us. It's been such a pleasure.
It was wonderful to join you as well. Thank you so much for my inaugural podcast experience.
Thanks for joining us for this episode. To stay up to date with the podcast, follow us on Instagram at Off the Tracks Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite listening platform for a brand new episode of Off the Tracks Podcast every Tuesday.